Welcome to My Care Alliance, our December podcast. What does success look like for helping professionals? There are a number of roles for those who want to help people navigate the complex healthcare system. In our December podcast, we will talk to four professionals who have been successful in creating and growing their business as helping professionals. As we discussed in our first podcast, helping professionals are those who are independent professionals who work to assist people, patients, and caregivers navigate the complex healthcare system. They can be nurse case managers, care managers, patient health advocates, billing professionals, or a number of other names. These entrepreneurs have taken the risk of going out on their own to build a business to focus on what they see as a crucial need to help people navigate the healthcare system. Listen to this podcast to learn why and how they started their business, the important things you should keep in mind as you move forward. This podcast will provide information that you can use whether you are new and thinking about going solo or have been working for some time and just want to gain some tips to revive your business. I'd like to introduce our faculty right now who have taken their time to be here today. First, I'd like to start ask Steve Barlam to introduce himself. Steve.
Such a pleasure. Thank you, Anne. My name is Steve Barlam. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I have been in practice since 1985. I'm here in Los Angeles, California, Southern California, and have been really focused on the psychosocial needs of older adults as I see the impact of the psychosocial needs on the medical condition. And so, you know, our practice over the years, from a small care management practice to a venture capital company that I co-founded, that had a national presence, to now working at Jewish Family Service in Los Angeles, has always been about integrating care management alongside caregiving services and really trying to provide solutions for older adults and their families.
Excellent, thank you. Next, I'd like to introduce Stacy Batista. Stacy.
Hi, yeah, thank you, Anne. Thank you so much for having me today. My name is Stacy Batista. I trained as a physician and have since started a business in healthcare advocacy, Sirona Health Advocates, here in the Boston area. I help to support people who are navigating the healthcare system and suffering from complex medical conditions. I have found that most of my clients are adult children looking for support for their elderly parents, sometimes support for themselves. And so it's a matter of working with families and individuals and patients all in navigating the healthcare system.
Thank you. And Tara Bailey.
Hi, thanks, Anne. I'm Tara Bailey. I am in the Melbourne, Florida area. I am a certified care manager and an incoming board director for Aging Life Care Association Florida chapter. I also serve on the National Patient Advocate Certification Board, and I'm also president of Space Coast Guardianship Association. This forum is really unique and wonderful because we all wear multiple hats. And so depending on the services that we're providing, we can be active in one realm or another and sitting under different guidelines. So I have been working at Total Long-Term Care Consultant Services for about 7 years now. I started up my own business this last year, which is more of a complement business to Total Long-Term Care. And it is called Brevard Healthcare Navigation.
Thank you, Tara. I really appreciate that. And Ginger, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you. My name is Ginger Jones. I am the CEO and one of the co-founders of MyCare Alliance. MyCare Alliance is in the business of helping everybody that's in a helping profession be able to succeed and do what they do best, offer care and support to their clients. Prior to that, I co-founded several other companies. One is a care management company, and much like Stacy and Tara, we did a lot for, or do a lot for, helping people navigate the healthcare system, but also like Steve, looking at a lot of the psychosocial effects and trying to really help people overall improve their quality of life, even beyond the quality of their health. So we've spent a lot of years on that. And in 2017, we co-founded our, an adult daycare center to meet some of the needs and bridge some of that gap between the social and health needs in the community.
Thanks, Ginger. Appreciate that. My name is Ann Llewellyn. I don't think I introduced myself. So my name is Ann Llewellyn, and I am a nurse advocate. I live in Plantation, Florida. Have been in healthcare for about 40 years and moved into this realm of advocacy after I had my own health challenge in 2016 and really realized how important it was to have an advocate as you navigate the healthcare system. And something that really, I was lucky to have two advocates who did help me and get me into a good treatment center. And as a result of them, I feel that that's why I'm here today. So I've put a lot of my energy since recovering into helping to grow the advocacy world. I was a board member, founding board member of the Patient Advocate Certification Board. I've been a past president of the Case Management Society of America, and I was awarded their Lifetime Achievement Award in 2015. So I feel that this is my place and time right now to help grow the world of advocacy. It's just such an important tool for people to use when they are thrust into the healthcare system. And having advocates educated and experienced and really understand, qualified to do that work is, you know, an important thing for all of us. So I'd like to get right into the questions because we have such a great panel here of entrepreneurs and people who have really been successful in starting their businesses. And so I'd like to share that information with you. So I'd like to start with our first question. Stacy, I'll ask you to start. What was the spark that drove you to start your own business?
That's a great question. I think what really sort of made me realize and appreciate the value of advocacy was serving in this role for my parents and in-laws. And I think that's what we hear from a lot of advocates is they come to this profession from a deep personal sense of experience and calling. And it was really through supporting them through some fairly significant health crises that I began to really appreciate the value of the training and the experience that I had as a physician, and how just invaluable that could be to someone who is in a position of extreme vulnerability, extreme stress, a lot of uncertainty, and how I could really be of great value during that time. And again, it was something that I came to after leaving my clinical practice. So it was really a wonderful way of realizing a new way to utilize my training and experience.
Excellent. Steve?
I am not a very patient guy. And so when I was in graduate school, I realized I love the clinical work. I loved working with clients, but I didn't want to be a psychotherapist. I didn't want to sit there and listen to people's problems. And I, again, just didn't have the patience. There would be times that I'd be hearing people and I'd be thinking in my head some of the creative solutions that people should try. And so I'd want to, you know, shake people up and say, have you thought of? But of course, I wouldn't have done that in that setting. And then I heard about this amazing mode of service delivery called case or care management at the time. And this was in the early 80s. And it was like music to my ears. And so in 1989, I just saw the opportunity to move from my first job into a private practice that I created, doing private care management. I saw opportunity there, and it allowed me to really sort of expand upon the creativity that was coursing through my veins of really wanting to make a difference and not necessarily wanting to do it in the same old way. So at the time it was new, now it's old hat. But that's what sparked me to jump aboard and really help to make a difference in clients' lives.
That's great. I feel like we grew up together, Steve. That's when
I know we are. Exactly.
Tara?
Well, I'd have to say that my story is similar to Stacy's in that probably, 18 years ago or so, I was caring for my aging mother-in-law, and there was no help. And I was raising two children. I was working on my undergraduate degree, a little late in life, but I was doing it, while also facing my own medical crises. And taking her to the physician appointments, there was no help. I remember crying, begging for help, and explaining that I thought she was in the end stages of her life. And finally, they recommended hospice. The first visit from the nurse, she told me that there was indeed help out there. And I wanted to know why. I was never told about it. And I remember breaking down and vowing that I was never going to allow anybody else to go through this. And I ventured on the next 18 years getting myself to this point. I was fortunate enough to help my mother. I moved her down from Indiana and cared for her the last 6 months of her life, while I also knew and understood I needed to take care of myself. So with her, it was a totally different experience. And then when my father, still up in Indiana, was passing, I was able to coordinate his care from here and then fly up when it was time and help my father and help my siblings. And the world of care management, patient advocacy has changed. And we're finally learning more. And people don't have to be going through this in fear and alone anymore. And it really is up to us to make sure that that word gets out. And Anne, Ginger, thank you for putting this together, because we all need help.
Yeah.
Do. True. And I'll chime in there too. I just want to, my experience is similar. I spent the first 20 years of my professional career as a registered nurse. And I worked in intensive care, a lot of time in home care, did management in long-term care and acute care, and was very frustrated with the gaps that I saw in the system and the responsibility. So each individual aspect of healthcare is looking out for its own best interest. And I had also had, I founded my first company in 2010. And within the 6 years prior to that, I had two of my children had catastrophic injuries. One of them had a spinal cord injury and another with a brain injury. And I went through that and thought, how does anybody who has no knowledge of the system figure out how to get through this? And I was just dedicated that I wanted to make change. I wanted to help things get better. And I did not believe that that would ever happen from the inside of the system. So I looked and started researching people like Ann and Steve, and there were pioneers in starting to do that. And so thank you both for the work you did early on that's kind of paved the way for the rest of us.
Great. Tara, what are some of the keys to your success? What would you attribute that to?
If it's not in your soul, don't do it.
Mm.
It has to truly be from the gut. And I've come across way too many people who are doing a job, and you can tell. They're actually, to me, a barrier for me to provide the services that I need to provide to my clients. So if it's not in your heart, don't do it. So that's what I say.
Good, thank you. Stacy?
Yeah, I would say being flexible. One thing that I learned, and it sort of helped me to pivot from an orientation of being a physician clinician to being an advocate, is that I'm really here to support my client. I may have ideas about what I think my client should do, and I can certainly gently nudge my client maybe in a particular direction, but it's really about them. It's about what solution is going to be the best for them in any given situation. It's about them going through the process so that when they actually reach that solution, they feel like this is right. This is the best choice for me. It's the best choice I could have made, you know, given all the information that I have. So I think it requires a lot of flexibility on my part to sort of be available to my client where they are, when they're there, and to just work with them. So and that's a part of what I love about it too.
Flexibility of the work. Yeah. Steve?
You know, for me it's about really being open to changes. And constantly challenging and looking at why am I doing what I'm doing? I ask myself that almost on a daily basis and just want to make sure it helps me stay focused. And it challenges me to be really thinking about why do I do the things that I do on a daily basis? Are there other ways to do things? And I embrace and I love, I mean, people in my life think I'm a little bit wackadoo because of just embracing changes, embracing new ways of looking at things. And it's just refreshing for me. It keeps things interesting, engaging. And that's part of my nature.
Excellent. Ginger?
I guess, I felt I had the passion coming into it, and so I didn't have any challenges sticking with that, and that's really driven me a long way and continues to. But one of the more challenging things that I had dealt with was transitioning from being a solo practitioner or just myself and a partner to starting to expand our offerings and hiring employees, and then figuring out, gosh, how do you actually run a business? Right. What do I need to know to keep this going and earn money at it so that we can help more people? So that was probably one of the biggest barriers we faced earlier on.
Okay. Yep. So if you could give one tip to someone looking to start their own business, what would that be? Steve?
For me, the biggest lesson I learned was that I had to get things down on paper. I really needed to figure out how to train others to do what I do so that it wasn't so dependent upon me, a charismatic leader of the organization, but rather I had a process of how do I train people to do what I do. So the training, education, thinking about the processes, getting it down on paper, because it's all about replication and scalability of any company if you want to grow. And so that's the biggest thing that I think I've always thought, well, you know, nobody will ever do it like me. But, you know, it's not brain surgery. You really can get it down to processes and train people to that. And that has been critical in my success and what I see of others.
Excellent. Ginger?
Along that same line, I would, you know, surround myself with resources to help me get a better understanding of the areas that I'm weak in. So I'm really strong in healthcare and navigating the field. And starting out, I was really ignorant in what I needed to do to run my company. So I surrounded myself with, you know, resources that could help me answer those questions about human resources and compliance. And that's kind of, that's one of the reasons we formed MyCare Alliance, was because we knew the struggles that companies go through in these helping professions. And we wanted to make it an easy place to find the resources and the help to support them.
Thank you. Tara?
I would say probably the thing for me is to put yourself with somebody that is a great mentor. Catherine Rollins was a great mentor to me when I met her for the first time. I knew she was who I wanted to be like. I could see the difference in her. I was in the healthcare field, but providing services for her and her clients, as well as other people. And I remember just being in awe because she just had it all together. She's probably the original advocate. She has been doing this for 25, 30 years, and I'm fortunate to have been able to work with her for the last 7, and she was a great partner with me to enable me to open up my own business that is in a little bit different realm, but it all kind of works together. And don't be afraid to ask questions. You don't know everything, mm-hmm. and your biggest enemy is what you don't know. So mm-hmm. remove that and ask others. And don't be afraid to say, I don't know the answer to that, but I can get back to you.
Great. Stacy?
I'm going to piggyback kind of on what other people have said, but I think talking to as many people as you can, to really understand the business, what it's like starting your own business, what it's like being an advocate, what are the stressors that you're going to face, and how are you going to meet those stressors? Putting together a network. And if you can find a mentor, that's amazing. That's wonderful. But also having a network of people that you can reach out to, and just, you know, making sure that you understand what this profession is going to be like, as you're getting into it.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think the people who are on the call today, they represent different organizations. So these different organizations are really starting to look at how to help people, what tips they need. Stacey, I don't know if you want to talk about the project that you're working on with NAC a little bit.
The mentoring program?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So NAC, the National Association of Healthcare Advocates, is looking to launch a brand new mentoring program in January. That will be a member benefit. And we're looking to really create strong connections between members who have experience in a particular area, can serve as mentors to people who are interested in learning more about that. It could be somebody who's even brand new to the field of advocacy, but who has a deep work background in marketing, say, and another advocate wants to learn more, or it can be, you know, advocacy related. So really anything. And I think sort of the overarching goal, again, is to create these connections, where we're able to share networks, resources, ideas, and just support each other even more. So look for that.
Great. How do you see technology in helping today's entrepreneurs move forward? And maybe if you can just give one example of a technology that you've implemented into your practice that has helped you be more efficient, be able to be more organized, if you have something that has worked for you. I know, Ginger, this is a big part of what MyCare Alliance is, so why don't you start?
Well, I was lucky enough to, several years ago, found a technology that functioned as our business administration, kind of a technology that contained our workflow. And as Steve was talking, figuring out how to replicate processes and teach other people to do what you do, technology is very helpful in being able to standardize and repeat. It's kind of you can create a rinse and repeat. So that was essential in being able to expand our services within one of my company's diversified nurse consultants, was that we needed to make sure that we could deliver the same kind of quality services each time, that our care managers did the same process, and that we had a way to check it. So we used technology to help us make sure that our team got their work completed, that our customers used, you know, had this similar experience, that we didn't miss anything, you know, that we were giving them everything that they needed. And then we used it to create efficiencies, which ultimately let us decrease our cost a little bit and serve people a little bit better, because we weren't spending so much manual time creating things. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the systems we brought forth into MyCare Alliance.
Right, right. Steve?
Yeah, for me, there's probably three or four buckets that technology has made a huge difference in my life, in my employees' lives. One is enhancing quality of life for our clients, of having tools in place that allow, especially in this environment right now, as we speak in the COVID environment world, allowing folks to have a window into the home, allowing seniors who can be socially isolated, stay more connected, and engage watching videos, listening to music, being able to just stay more engaged with family. So enhancing quality of life. A second is really about efficiencies, and that's really about windshield time. So much of my time is behind the windshield and my staff's time, actually, right? And so if there are ways that we can accomplish you know, our goals without having to get in our car and hop in the car to get information. It leads to more efficient, you know, operations. Third really has to do with real data in real time. So using biometric devices, which we use, we're able to track weights of clients, blood sugars of clients, and not necessarily using tools that are Bluetooth enabled that capture it to a cloud, but rather that a working caregiver or the client or a family can input the results into a device, you know, when surveys are sent to clients, that we can capture things in a very unified way. So real data enhancing quality of life and making us more efficient, like that's the trifecta for us.
Great. Tara, any technologies that you've put into place?
Yeah, as far as on the personal business, Brevard Healthcare Navigation, this past year I was approved as a partner for, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say the product or not, but it's medical equipment at home, and it does provide a lot of the extra medical needs that we may have in order to ensure that rehospitalization rates are kept low, that we can catch CHF, you know, in the event that there's weight gain going on, blood pressures, all of that, that could create a crisis if not kept up on. So I do provide that as far as at Total Long-Term Care Consultant Services. We utilize a program where we can utilize either the tablet or our phone in order to create our case notes and keep all that information going. A few weeks ago, I was on a webinar conference and got to meet with Ginger. And so in a weird little plug in here, I'm waiting for Ginger and I to get together, because I would like to see how her system will help to improve not only TLCCS, but also Brevard Healthcare Navigation at the same time. So a little weird plug, but there you go.
Yeah, that's great. Stacy, any technology you're using in your practice?
Not a ton. It's just me. I'm a solo entrepreneur. But I must say I have been enjoying the fact that everybody has become so Zoom proficient. clinicians included. You know, it really helps, I think, families to be able to stay connected. We can have family meetings with clinicians much more easily. People who are all around the country can join in, and that's really wonderful to be able to do. And then it's allowed me to do a lot more networking and connecting with people, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, especially during this COVID time. We can't go out to lunch, so we meet on Zoom.
Right, yeah. Which is often even easier.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think, I'll just add one thing, if it's okay. Because I'm working with advocates and care managers and across these different sectors that are so similar, but different. And one of the things that I see is a lot of the solo practitioners assume that they're too little for the technology, but I think there are really good solutions out there that fit you no matter what size, and once in place will help you rapidly be able to scale if you do want to grow, but are really affordable and help you. I think one of the biggest things that I've seen in some of the calls that I've been on is I'm going to change the subject a little bit, but when you are running a business and you're providing consulting services, you're kind of making yourself liable legally. And I really am very diligent about making sure that I document what I tell people, when I tell them, you know, and keep that as a protective. So that's another way that I think technology can be helpful, is just to keep yourself super organized of, you know, just from a liability standpoint.
Yeah, the documentation is important. And we all have computers. We can document in our computers, but if something happens to the computer, then the documentation is gone. So being connected to a system like you have for the cloud and being able to make sure that it's retrievable if something happens. So, what are your best practices that you strive to achieve? Anybody, let's start with Ginger, with your practice and your work that you're doing in My Care Alliance. What are some of the best practices that you're really working towards?
Some of the best practices that we're working towards is really about the tools that we're giving our customers, our members with the Alliance, to make sure that we have a good understanding of their needs and that we're able to deliver solutions and resources in a affordable way that they can implement them. And like I said earlier, then they can be able to provide these essential services in their communities and keep that going, because it needs to come from the small business. It needs to come from the entrepreneurs. It's not going to come from the healthcare system. We have to make these changes. And so we want to give them the tools to do that, including the technology, but also the services that can be difficult to manage, like your bookkeeping and your billing and AR, when that's not really your forte. No, I know some accountants, but I don't understand them. I certainly do not like spending my time with spreadsheets.
Yeah, right. So you're really using your systems that you've developed for your own company and really making that available to people outside of your company now.
Yeah, our co-founders had all seven companies co-founded My Care Alliance, and we had operations in home care, health advocacy, care management, adult daycare, and we've taken the best practices from those and are using those to support our clients. So by no means does our customer have to take the best practices that we've compiled, but it is something that we offer as a resource, you know, somebody that looking for some different solutions.
Great. And Steve?
You know, it would boil down to three different things. I'm always a three kind of guy, I guess. You know, ABCs, three bears, all that kind of good stuff. So the first best practice is really about treasuring our caregivers and doing it in a differentiated way. Since we do provide non-medical home care services, in order for us to really succeed, it's all about attracting, retaining, and not just doing those two, but treasuring in a very distinctive way, the care providers, because when you do that well, boy, do they deliver phenomenal care for clients, and that positively impacts healthcare. The second area is really about keeping folks safe. That's a best practice that we strive for in this day and age of educating our clients, their families, our caregivers, just helping people to stay safe, especially during this surge right now. And, you know, the best practice, and it's an odd one, it's staying curious. You know, that's something that I have to poke my colleagues at work sometimes and, you know, keep challenging them because that's part of my nature, but helping them. And I think that when people are uniquely curious and engaged, boy, do they offer a different level of service. So those are the things that we strive for in our company right now.
Excellent. Tara?
I would say, I could probably give a little example, but to me, treating people as family is important, or at least how I would want to be treated. I have a 94-year-old client that I was with last week, and helping her out of the car, and a woman, I have no idea who she was, came over, threw her arms up in the air and said, "Thank you, Lord, for this daughter who is taking good care of her mother." And I looked at my client and I could tell she was smiling behind her mask. But it was just cute because one of the things that enables us to treat people as family is to understand what the social determinants of health is and to know where they're coming from. This woman has her own way of doing things. If I had treated her in a cookie cutter way, I wouldn't get the responses from her that I do. I've had another elderly gentleman who just struggled with so much anger in his life, and taking the time to understand his background and the tragedies that he faced in his life that even his family did not know, changed him. And it took a broken family, and they were able to come together and have peace with one another for the first time, such that when he passed away, the son who he had nothing to do with, or the son had nothing to do with him, it was kind of a vice versa thing, they were together. And there was true love and acceptance, forgiveness. We have to understand people's backgrounds. If we don't take the time to do that, it's kind of hard for us to give our best in this work.
It's great. Yeah, just really trying to help people. You know, I think that's why helping professionals. Stacy, anything from you with regard to, you know, best practice that you strive to achieve in your practice?
Sure. Yeah. One is I try to give anyone who reaches out to me something. It's, you know, it's hard. Again, as a solo entrepreneur, I get calls from many people who are unable to afford my services. But I try to listen to what their concerns are, what their needs are, and then give them something, some resource, some idea, some strategy, so that, you know, that they've been able to achieve something through their call and through their reaching out.
Yeah, that's important because we can't help everybody. That's true. We can't. And that's why the connector piece, yeah. I think that's one of the things that I really love to do is connect people and, help people find other people who can help them because it always isn't us.
Right.
So, two more questions and then, just your closing thoughts, but, what is like your biggest challenge that you face right now with regard to your new business or your growing business? Stacy, you want to start?
Yeah, I guess my biggest challenge really is having the public really understand what it is that I do as a physician who's working as a health advocate. You know, what does that mean? How do they best utilize me? What is the value that I bring? I feel like that's not really yet well known. I think it's, you know, it's becoming, you know, we're getting there. There's definitely more discussion happening. But for most people, you know, when they hear about what I do, their minds are blown. Wow, that's so amazing. So I'd love for it to become much more of a normative process, that if somebody has some health questions, they think, I should probably call a health advocate right now and just kind of, you know, check in. Because that's the best way to have it happen.
Yeah, I think that's our biggest challenge for the whole industry, is to help people understand what we do and what all of us do and all our different pieces. Tara?
I would have to say that getting hospitals to understand that by working with us, we actually make their lives much easier. We're able to quantify the type of care that we're giving and how we're able to keep them from being hospitalized again for the same issues over and over. We can be their eyes and their ears. I've received phone calls from their healthcare coaches to see how my client is doing. They get to bill insurance for that, but they're not recognizing that our services are truly valuable. And outside of they get to mark a phone call, we do a lot more than that. We're actually with these people. We see the subtle changes at home, and we're able to intervene before a crisis occurs and prevent lost healthcare dollars, if you will, and save time from the physician for unnecessary visits, or at least provide additional information to the physician so they can make a better call as to what to test for and what to look for. So I think that for me is the biggest challenge, is getting other healthcare professionals to recognize the value that we do provide.
Steve?
I have a variation on the theme, and I appreciate your comments, Tara. You know, it resonates with me, and also yours, Stacy. For me, it boils down to that our biggest competition is our greatest customer, and that's the daughters, the adult children. And so many of them are doing it on their own, and they're not doing a great job, and they're trying their best, and they're wanting to do the right thing. And so in a way, they truly are our biggest competition, more so than anyone else out there. Yet they are our biggest customer. So the challenge in a way has to do with what Tara and Stacy were mentioning. It's how do you create value? How do you understand what they need and give it to them in a way that where they can see the value and how it will work for them? And that's, you know, it's a tricky, it's a little nuanced in a way. But that is such a critical obstacle that I think we all face in a way. And I like, Tara, the way that you approach it in terms of educating the referral sources, right? And, you know, those who could really make the most impact and get the clients to us so we could make a difference. And they sometimes are a huge obstacle. But I would say, from my perspective, it's that along with the family members who think, oh, that's not so hard. I should be able to do that. I should don that superwoman or Superman cape and, you know, take care of everything by myself and my job and my kids and my parents and my whatever. Right. And we all know how that fails.
Well, you know, I think that is part of the you know, part of our work that we, I think now that we're becoming more recognized with through certification, through professional organizations, through you know, the media is, I mean, there was just somebody who called last week and a reporter wanted to talk to somebody about, you know, how people with COVID are functioning today. And they call it the Advocate Association, which I thought was great. So it is happening, but it's almost like, you know, we wouldn't go into a court of law without an attorney. So how are we going to get to the point when we tell people, if you're in the healthcare system, it's good to have an advocate, whether it's your own family advocate or it's a paid advocate, you know, and then when it gets too much for the family, that there is help out there. We just need to keep, I think we're at the turning cusp. Like they said, we were an emerging industry. And I think, you know, we've come from that infancy stage to the point where we're really getting ready to take our step.
Ann, I have a question for you, and also maybe Stacy as a physician in the field. The issue as I see it is oftentimes families look at us as we're all or nothing, that we're going to come in there, take over, it's going to be very expensive, it's going to cost hours and hours and hours. And there's a lot of gray area. And so in between, we don't have to take over completely, right? You know, there are ways for us to get involved, consult with families, point them in the right direction. And then when they run up against the next snag, they can call us and we can use ourselves. So I think it's incumbent upon anyone new entering into the field, or all of us, you know, seasoned people, to be thinking about innovative ways to package what we do in bite sizes, so that way we don't terrify or push away potential clients.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And Stacy, you said that sometimes you talk to people who maybe they can't afford your services, but you always give them something to walk away with. And that's what we all have to do, because again, you know, until we do have a way for this to be financed, then we do need to have alternatives. And it is helping people. I think there's some people who are very successful and who are being doing some pro bono work, especially during this time, which helps.
And I'll say one of the services that we have added to our offerings this past year are small packages, where for a specified amount of money, you get so many hours worth of, whether it's assessment or a roadmap, if you will, for services that you need to consider based on your situation, phone calls, guidance and direction. It could be also to go, you know, with them to a physician appointment one time and ask the kinds of questions that the family members can't ask because they're not there, and that we can utilize our skills and professional backgrounds to ask the right things. So there are different smaller packages that we offer that are not longer term.
Yeah, I think Steve, that's to your point. Yeah, great.
Exactly.
That's work.
Yeah. Just one last question, because I think this is always important too. Where do you go to keep up to date? I think Steve, you said that was an important point for your staff, to keep them challenged, to keep them asking questions. So where do each of you go to learn and to keep up to date and to share information? Steve, you want to start?
Where do I start? I have a COO who I work with, Mary Beth, and she is combing the professional association websites, as well as CDC, as well as just what's going on. So there's probably 7 different sources that we look at on a weekly basis, just to figure out and to read their blogs and to stay attuned with what's going on, from the Aging Life Care Association to Home Care Association websites, to the CDC, to local governments.
Yeah,
especially in this day and age of COVID. So, yeah.
And even CDC or CMS with all the bill payment for Medicare, Medicare Advantage, and how all these systems work. Tara?
Exactly as Steve was saying, I do a lot of conferences that I get into. I'm constantly combing CMS. I have a number of other professional organizations that I read their whiteboard papers. I am writing newsletters and sending those out to different people, paying attention to state legislative changes that are going to impact our clients, as well as our cohorts, you know, how it may impact our businesses. I have a lot of network persons that I work with that they may be attorneys and they may be involved in a specific suit, like the Idle lawsuit that took place. I got information about that because the Small Business Association upon themselves changed the amount that they were supposed to be providing. So there is a lawsuit on that. So I get that information. Anywhere and everywhere I can research is what I'm doing. I write articles for magazines and get information out for lay people and for family members so that they know where to go and where to look, and need to put your links in there so that they can find information for themselves and not just take my slant or my interpretation of what it is I thought I read.
Right. Stacy?
Yeah, I do a lot of that. I get, there's a publication, a blog that comes out daily, Stat Health, and they have a variety of different resources available and different sort of blog headings that you can subscribe to. So I've subscribed to a bunch of those, and that allows me to really scan, you know, everything that they're putting out on a daily basis, and sort of latch on to the ones that are most pertinent to me and my clients at the time. Yeah.
Great. Ginger, how are you keeping up to date?
Well, with the care management, and it depends on which hat I'm wearing, but much the same as you guys. I'd say the other thing that I would add in there, I'm not sure if we mentioned, was collaborating with complementary service companies. So although I don't provide home care, I've learned a lot about what I can do to better help my clients by collaborating with people that are providing home care. So I think that cross collaboration, there's so many needs and there's so much to offer that we don't have to be afraid of each other, but we really should just, you know, collaborate. I think we talked early on about, you know, we have people representing themselves as health advocates, some represent themselves as care managers. To Stacy's point earlier, getting people to understand what you do. I mean, ourselves that are the industry, we use so many different titles and there's so many overlaps that no wonder the public really can't wrap their head around it. So I think it's up to us to collaborate, continue to understand, better understand each other and what we do well and what's the same and what's unique is super important. And I think I love the conversation today because one of the things that I've heard consistently, despite who, you know, what term you identify yourself with, is that each of you represent first and foremost the interest of your customers, and you do it in a very customer or patient-centric way, and you're not conflicted. Because you have their interest at heart primarily. And I think that's something that we all have in common, even if our service models differ a little bit. So thank you all for participating today.
Yes. And I would just like to give one, you know, recommendation with regard to people getting education is to belong to your professional organization.
Yeah.
I think that's an important piece that a lot of people get away from. You know, especially when money gets tight, people say, I don't have the money to join. But I know for me, belonging to my professional organization was, I got so much more from it than I paid for. which really helped me throughout my career. And so think about, because that's where all of this information comes from, you know, education, professional development, learning about your standards of practice, learning about the ethical issues that are facing all of us as professionals. This is where a lot of it comes, you know, and is synthesized and helps us all get on an even keel. So,
but I would additionally add on to that, Anne, that it's only as much, you get as much from it that you give in to it. So you need to be engaged. It's one thing to just pay membership dues, which we all do to multiple, I'm sure, associations, organizations, and we get varying degrees of value from them. But when you engage, like what Tara was saying, participating on webinars and conferences and reading blogs, like Stacy said, you know, that really makes the difference. It's only as valuable as you invest in that entity. So I really encourage folks not only to listen to your professional associations, but stay as engaged as possible, especially during this time when we all need it.
Yeah. Stacy, any closing words from you?
This has been really wonderful. I love meeting all of you and learning more about the areas where you work. I think it's incredibly beneficial, you know, to me and to my clients, to know about people who are practicing in slightly different areas of this field from what I do. It enables me to really give the best support to my clients when I know all of the other resources that are available out there to them. So I really appreciate that.
Thanks. Tara, I'll give you the closing word.
Thanks. You know, we can all point to really tragic situations over this past year, but I think one of the greatest things that has occurred is that we are able to meet in this kind of an environment now. Yeah. And I will say for myself, I have been able to refer cases to people other parts of the country because I have met them in a forum such as this, and I have received phone calls from people around the country. I wouldn't have been able to do that before because I wouldn't know exactly what their background was and felt comfortable with them because I don't like to do that. But with this new technology of everybody basically being in Zoom meetings at this point, it has made a huge difference.
Yeah, there's some good that has come from this crazy time that we lived in during 2020. So I think you're right, virtual is here. I think more and more conferences will be the hybrid type where we can go there, or we can participate virtually, and it's going to get better, I think, as we go forward. So that's exciting. But I would like to thank the panel. Thank you for your time today, for bringing your expertise to our discussion on what does success look like from helping professionals. And I think you got a good taste of it. So good luck to the people who are listening. Please feel free. We'll have the each of the faculty members' bio and their photo on the website, and you can get in touch with them if you wanna talk further. But thank you for listening, and we hope to bring you future podcasts that will help you grow yourselves and your businesses. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
You're welcome. Thank you, Anne.
You're welcome.
What a pleasure.